legislature in 2011, and from the business communities to say specifically, this is the vision that we want you guys to do. We want you to go out and do these following things, and if you do these things, jobs will result. And that's what we want you to do, is get these jobs. And so our efforts have been combined, if you will, for that sole purpose. And I would suggest to you, Mr. Chairman, that I think that that has happened quite well. It has been a calculation. It has not been randomly selected. We have calculatedly put our program together. And I think the results of the fact that we have more jobs in Oregon today than we've ever had in the history of the state, and the fact that the unemployment rate is falling, and the fact that we have a little bit more taxation here in order to spend, is testimony to the fact that we had a role in that too, and one in which I think I and the department are very proud of. So with that, perhaps we can jump to page 109, which is our priorities and reductions options. And if it pleases the chair, what we will do is just go through the, we have listed them, as you can kind of see, in a high priority, middle, lower, and low priorities, and just go line by line with them, kind of machine gun style, to try to answer any questions that you might have regarding why it's in there, what's in there, or whatever.
Perfect.
But, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to reiterate, if I could, as our direction was and our vision was, is that we do basically three things in this department in order to get the jobs back into Oregon again. One of those is new jobs and jobs retention. The second thing is the industrial lands. And the third is a service to our communities, and particularly small business, minority businesses, and rural communities, too. Those are our three silos that we're working on, and everything on this sheet you'll see pertains to one of those particular three silos. So as we start off at the very top, we have as a high priority the Strategic Reserve Fund. And I think we've indicated in the past that Strategic Reserve Fund is probably the single most important tool that we have for jobs retention. That one is the one in which we use consistently in order to land those jobs and to retain those jobs. I believe our discipline is very, very good there. I've reiterated, I think, before that so far we've spent $6.7 million, and we're getting back just on personal income tax alone on that expenditure $6.9 million back again, and that's with no multipliers at all. So I think that that is a reason for that it is being on our top priority. If it's okay, Mr. Chairman, I'll glance around and see if there's any questions, and I'll fire ahead.
Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to ask the committee to hold their questions till about 12:30.
Okay.
And then what we'll do is we'll take a few minutes, probably 10, 15 minutes, address questions.
1:30.
Excuse me, 1:30. Thank you. 1:30, excuse me. And then after that, then we'll proceed forward, and we'll kind of go on that rotation.
Good. Second, number two in the priority list is the innovation of NAMI support and innovation of commercialized research. There has been some discussion as to whether that's a new program or not, but I want to remind the committee that, in fact, money was allocated 2 years ago for NAMI. $1 million was allocated, and that has resulted in over $20 million back again. And so while there are new elements to that, this is also a program which has returned on investment very, very successfully. This is our seed cordon for the future. This is where we're going to have to go as we look around corners and say, okay, fine, our chip manufacturing facilities are very important to us, but what are we going to do for the future? Again, it cuts across all industries, and it cuts across both rural and urban, too. So the NAMI support is the number two, and number three, the commercialized research. That, as you might remember, is what we discussed in going through that valley of death, going from the research side to the development side. Small business is going to be from the conceptual idea side in order to get us over into the commercialization side, which attracts then, we hope, some venture capitalist money or other types of things. Mr. Chairman, I would point out to you perhaps the Google example is a good one, because it was the two gentlemen who enrolled at the Stanford University and were accepted on an idea at Stanford. And with that, they had an idea called Google. Stanford then put money behind that same idea, and they are the single largest beneficiary when Google went public. So there is a match-up, I think, of the idea as well as the money investment and what it can make for that institution as well as for ourselves, too. Number three is, or four is a credit enhancement program. This one helps small businesses who otherwise wouldn't get help. It is a very high return on investment. It is, again, oriented toward the small businesses who need the help to move forward, particularly oriented toward rural Oregon and the coast. It is a program that is highly desirable, and again, it has a very high return on investment, and that's why we have it in the top priority, too. As I indicated before, the three silos that we strategically have gone after to create jobs has been new business and job retention, industrial lands, and the community development side of things, and the jobs. Those three things, as I say, are all of our funds are directed toward those three things in order to get the jobs in Oregon. The brownfields is an example of the industrial lands policy. Brownfields are existing lands there right now. They're usually inside of UGBs, if not all the time. If we can clean those up and get them up onto a productive basis, we can get them back on the tax rolls again, and we roll the brownfields into the industrial lands policy, as I say, as our second goal, if you will, on the industrial lands.
Really quick, Robin reminded me to ask this question. Under the revolving loan and guarantee programs, can you break those out of the four programs?
Yes. Would you like to do it now, or should we respond when you ask questions, or later?
Why don't we do it just really quick?
Okay.
Right now.
Hello. For the record, my name is Lynn Beaton with the department. Yes, the way that it breaks out is two of the programs really are loan programs, the Oregon Business Development Fund and the Entrepreneurial Development Loan Fund. The Entrepreneurial Fund is targeted more at small entrepreneurs, as the name would imply, and we can loan up to $25,000 initially. And the idea is to help those at-risk companies that are frankly too risky generally for banks to want to loan to. So that's the focus of that program. The other two funds that we're talking about, the Capital Access Program and the Credit Enhancement Fund, are guarantee programs. And for the Capital Access Program, we work with banks and establish a loss reserve fund for each of those lenders. And then those banks will do the loan independent of us. We're really not involved with that. But the loss reserve fund is helping to guarantee that loan and just make it a little bit more palatable for the banks. So the borrower will pay a fee that will go into that fund at that time. The other guarantee program is the Credit Enhancement Fund. And for that one, we have established a fund at the state level, and in that case, the bank will actually come to the state each time that there's a bank loan, and we'll get the money that way. But both of those are guarantee programs. One, though, is a loss reserve account living with the bank. The other is a fund living with the state. Does that help?
Yep, that's perfect. We just wanted to overview of those four.
Great. Next on our high priority list is the debt service on the bonds. As you might know, that we leverage the bonds for our industrial lands program, and that's the way we move forward. The debt service on that is what's listed there. It comes from lottery funds, and without that that debt service, obviously, we wouldn't be able to do the bonds. We wouldn't be able to do the industrial lands. That's the whole reason that we're going forward again is the industrial land side of things. This is the debt service in order for us to kind of get to the industrial lands program. Special Public Works Fund. Special Public Works also falls under that silo of the industrial lands. Again, I talked about new business, industrial lands, and the community development side of things. That middle one is the industrial land side of it, and the Special Public Works falls under that. That oftentimes is roads, access roads, and other things that help get to a particular site. And so without that, oftentimes somebody will be at a site, but there's no road there or there's no utilities or other types of things that can help connect up to make that piece of land developable in the next 6 months. And so that's what our plan is on these certified sites, is to have them, quote, ready to go within a six-month period of time. We use that Special Public Works Fund in order to provide the infrastructure in order for that site to become more available. The upper middle priority section is the next one that we have. regional investment, and rural investment. I'm going to put those two together because this is the money that 2 years ago, you might remember, was cut back rather substantially, and we were a pass-through 4 years ago. 2 years ago, we were directed very specifically by the legislature to say that there's a question as to how that money is spent. So we want you, economic development, to make sure that that money is spent toward jobs and job creation. It has been a bit of a struggle, and a natural one, if you look back on it, in order to get to the right contracts and to get to the regional rural group and say, okay, this is what we need, because we need to justify the jobs that you're doing. In the past, it's natural that the regional rural people say, well, we need flexibility because we're not sure what kind of opportunities we're going to have coming up. And so it has been hard to draft a proposal, if you will, that will include the flexibility but also the certainty of job creation. In some cases, that's gone quite quickly. In some cases, it hasn't. It's been a wrestle. And one of the districts was just formed, quite frankly, about 4 months ago. But I would say to you that we're getting there. And I think the relationship, while I won't say rocky, but it has not been totally smooth, but I think there's good cooperation and understanding by everybody right now as to where we got to go.
Real quick, Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It would be very helpful if you could give us a summary statewide of where those districts are, who the on-the-ground delivery mechanism is.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, we would be happy to do that. The other important part of this is, in almost every occasion when we are looking at either jobs or job development, we ask the regional people to join in. They have a seat at the table, and they are a complementary force, if you will, to us as we go, as we put it together.
Mr. Chair, if I can just nuance my request a little bit more. I would assume you have this on a database, so it's not laborious to put it together. But I'd like to know who the regional and rural boards are, what territories they comprise, and who the people are that are on them.
Okay. We can do that.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Thank you. When I talked about our three goals job creation and industrial lands and helping the community, those are the three goals. And when you look at something like a company like a Google that perhaps is going to be in the Dalles, you find all three of those factors being affected and working. You have new jobs. You have industrial land being used there, and you have the community being helped out at the same time. So that's where all three of these things come in. And again, regional rural money was a part of this whole thing in order to make it all happen. So that regional rural money is an important factor. Capital Access Program gives small businesses another funding option, a good return on investment. It is a way that the small business people can find accessibility to some capital programs that we have. Helps us, again, on the small business side and on the smaller community side. Film and video. Film and video is one in which I've been very involved with for many, many years. The film and video side is what we considered in the middle priority because we cut back or suggested in our cutbacks that perhaps would be an area, but we want to make sure that it could be whole if, in fact, a big movie came along and creates lots of jobs and has the image that could enforce Oregon at the same time. So it is a high priority. I'm not sure that it should be measured in terms of return on investment of jobs, and I would suggest the same thing is true with the arts. I'm not sure that the arts fit into, if you will, the paradigm of jobs and job creation and the evaluation of that in this particular area. But it is an important one, I think, for the state in terms of jobs and also in terms of the image, if you will, of where we want to go.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Berger.
Could you comment on what you're up against as far as Canada is concerned in drawing the film industry there?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berger, thank you very much. Veronica is in the room here, but let me see if I can take a swipe at it because I was in that business for 35 years. The strength of the dollar really allowed the out-migration, if you will, of film and video out of Hollywood. And they found a base, if you will, in certain pockets around the country, around the world, really. But really, Canada was the one in which most of them settled into. And last time I heard, there were 5 to 7 sound stages. And for the longest time, they were able to have a labor force and all of about two-thirds of the cost of what could be produced in the Hollywood area. So there was a huge advantage to produce in Canada. I think that that's changing slightly. And again, if we want to elaborate on that conversation, we'd be happy to talk to Veronica, who is probably more experienced, not probably, is more experienced in that. But my sense is that that's wavering a little bit. Again, the strength of our dollar has fallen. I think that that has made some opportunities for us here also. Thank you. Industrial sector outreach. This would fall under the column, if you will, of jobs and job creation. This is an investment that we make when we are looking at, let's say, agriculture. We ask for that sector also to contribute money. And in the food and food processing side of things, we might say, how can we do better? How can we make sure agriculture, farming, and food processing is going forward? Washington might put in some money there too, and we'd look beyond the borders to try to say, how can we make this industry whole and strong? And that's an example, perhaps, of industry outreach money that we use in that particular area. It is oriented, again, toward industries, and we ask for a companion contribution by that industry as we march forward together. I lost my place. Sorry. Oh, a water wastewater fund. That helps with the infrastructure that delivers a service to sites, obviously, for communities almost all the time. They're smaller communities. If anybody is looking to locate plant operation and they have water or wastewater problems, that particular community is probably not going to be chosen. In addition to that, many industries that we currently are looking at have accelerated needs for sewage. For example, if they're chip manufacturers or if they are, let's say, in the beverage industry and manufacturing beverages, they have an accelerated need for wastewater, and we have to make sure that those systems are in place along with the cities in order to accommodate that.
Really quick, share with us the relationship between the water sewer system program, WWF, and then also the Special Public Works Fund.
Okay. Lynn, I'm getting hoarse a little bit, so I'll...
Sure. Mr. Chair, the fundamental difference is the water wastewater program is applied if there's a non-compliance issue. So if Department of Health or Environmental Quality state that a community has a water quality problem that they need to fix, that fund can be used for that. Special Public Works Fund is a little broader, and it covers more activities beyond just water. So the Special Public Works Fund is generally where we're going to be funding our industrial lands initiative from, water wastewater, particularly for compliance issues.
Could you use Special Public Works for compliance issues?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I believe you can.
Okay, thank you. Why don't we keep moving forward? CDBG.
Mr. Chairman, if I could touch on international, that one might be next, unless you'd like to skip over that one.
No.
Okay.
Somehow my
international.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Sorry. International has received a little bit of publicity lately because there are three elements to our international effort. There is the ability to ship goods and services outside of the state. There is the ability to bring goods and services in the state. And then there is the opportunity, if you will, in my opinion, of emerging nations and the relationship with not only emerging nations but mature nations and where we are. We have had a policy in place for about the last 10 years, Mr. Chairman, that I think needs to be revisited, and that's what we are currently doing. We have a geographical-based structure right now. Other states have a slightly different structure, and I think that it is time for us to kind of revisit the whole area. We have some significant changes going on in the global side of things, and I think that we really need to kind of pay attention to where not only we are and our trading partners are today, but where we need to go 5 to 10 years from now and set a structure right in order for us to put it together now and to continue to build toward that future too. Just a couple of observations. I know there's a lot of interest on China. There are going to be 400 million people that are going from the countryside into an urban setting. The largest probably urban migration in the history of the world is going to be taking place there. Mm-hmm. And our policy right now is to have 2 trade shows somewhere in the world a year and then round up people to attend the trade shows. I think it's time to revisit that whole vision, if you will, and go forward.
Excuse me, I'm lost.
Oh, sorry.
I've been working from the spreadsheet, and I don't find the international listed as part of the priorities. It's down below as an unranked.
I'm sorry. I've been working off of page 109.
Okay.
So.
Correct.
Maybe perhaps a heads up on this worksheet.
Uh-huh.
Somehow international was inadvertently left off, I think.
Actually, Mr. Chair, Cora Parker, for the record, from the Budget and Management Division. Well, the department's probably about to speak in and say the same thing. I think the International Division, for purposes of this document, which is aligned with budget structures, or that technical summary cross-reference, that budget term, is part of the operations line item, so it falls in that unranked item, and that's simply because of how it falls from a budgetary funding perspective. But the list that the director is going off of is really that programmatic focus. So,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if I could request that the agency work off from the spreadsheet,
sure.
Because that's what the committee is going to be needing to work off from, is this, the spreadsheet.
Be happy.
Is that all right?
You bet.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
And just so we're all on the same page, it's 111.
111.
111.
Yeah. I'm just looking for where.
Mm-hmm.
Good water, wastewater.
Yep.
And then
right there. Yeah.
Right here. Oh, CDBGs. Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, the next one I have is the CDBGs, and that is a federal program, as you might know. It is probably the most complicated program, it's a grant program, that we have in the department. The rules are constantly changing. They are very specific, and if we don't obey the rules to the letter, we are liable to have to fund things which we have said yes to, if you will. So that one takes a great deal of knowledge, continued knowledge, again, because the terms and conditions are changed on a regular basis. Then you might want to add a little bit more, if you want to, on the CDBG stuff.
Mr. Chair, probably the key thing to remember is just this: these are federal dollars. They're grant dollars. It's the biggest grant program that we have for local communities, which makes it pretty valuable. And it's a fund that can cover a lot of uses. Housing also does get part of that because it covers housing, economic development, et cetera. But it's a fairly substantial grant fund that's pretty worthwhile to local communities.
Really quick for the committee. On that $30 million, does part of that go to housing, or is that economic development's part?
Mr. Chair, I believe I need to check, but I think all of that's coming to us, and then we split off the piece that goes to housing and allocate it to them directly.
Okay, so part of that $30 million goes to housing.
I believe that is true. I will need to check.
Can you share with us also just really quick?
That's correct.
Yeah, on the CDBG program, can you break that out and share with us how those categories for how that money can be used?
Mr. Chair, I can get that information for you. I mean, there are a bunch, obviously, as you know.
Community
facilities, housing, direct economic development. There's also, obviously, parameters for what communities can apply and which can't. So I can get that for you. It's pretty clear criteria, but I don't have it memorized.
Nope. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, it's approaching 1:30. I don't know whether we should press on or should we stop here.
Well, let's ask. What I'm trying to do, committee, is let them proceed forward and then take breaks to ask questions. And now looks like a natural spot. I think Senator Berger, you have a question.
My question, Mr. Chairman, was in the next category. I didn't know whether you meant you were going to cut it off and not go to that category, but if they're going to go to that category.
Yeah. What we're going to do is if there's a clarification question, feel free to ask that at any time. If there's a question as to why, who, what, where, et cetera, I'm going to try and ask you to hold those till the next 30-minute break.
Okay.
If that's okay. Senator Morris.
I'd like to back up, Mr. Chairman, and ask a question about film and video.
Oh, of course.
The kind of jobs that are created when those enterprises come to town, are those temporary jobs? Or are they permanent jobs?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Morris, typically what a group needs is what they call an A crew or a B crew when they come into town. And those are usually people that are already here and are engaged in work on a full-time basis. They oftentimes then need an extension of that to a B crew and even a C crew if it's a big movie that they're shooting or if they need special techniques, if you will. You get enough movies in, and then you have an A and a B crew on a full-time basis, and so you've established a knowledge base, if you will, and an expertise. Mm-hmm. So the secret, quite frankly, is to get enough business in there so you can have layers, if you will, on a full-time basis. So the answer is if you have enough business, then they are full-time jobs. If they're not, then you have a thin, if you will, crew, and you have additions, or they'll bring their own people in. And again, Veronica might want to elaborate a little bit more on that if that answers your question.
Thank you. It's very helpful. I guess more specifically, the question is, have we built it to a level to create permanent jobs, or are still we struggling?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to defer that one. I have lost my knowledge base over the last 3 years as to where we are and how deep does our expertise go. So I will defer that question if I could, because I don't know the answer to that one.
Maybe we can deal with that at a later date.
Thank you. Senator Berger,
I'd like to ask two questions, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to go to industrial lands and ask if anyone has found out where the status of the IP property is in Gardner.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berger, the answer is yes. I think that there's a couple of things. There is a question about a floodplain, and so we're trying to find out is that on a floodplain or not, and is that a deal breaker, if you will. Number two, there's a question about the willing seller aspect of it. We want to make sure that the seller is a willing seller, and there is perhaps, at least my knowledge is, that there was a question about that too. And even there, we're trying to move it along to see if it can be a certified land, if those two answers are yes.
Senator Berger, do you have a follow-up?
And the other one is, when you get to the next category, if you would please tell me the stipulations and the sideboards that you have on women and minority business services. In other words, I have had a complaint this week about a business owned by a man and woman, but the woman is listed in order to get minority services through your department, and I want to know, do they get special preference to contracts? Is there an investigation of that, that you are not being hoodwinked? So that's perfect. That's a couple of questions there, and that's all, Mr. Chairman.
Why don't we do this? Representative Avakian has a question.
No, you can pass.
We can pass. Well, why don't we move into then the SBDCs and Women and Minority Business Services, and we can have that issue addressed.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I would like to just say a couple of things, if I could. In our budget, I think the reductions were suggested, or the suggested reductions, hit us particularly hard because I believe that they're not the 10% reductions. If you look on page 110, for example, you'll see that our department total was 488, but 77% of that, of course, is revolving loan funds. The remainder, $111 million, is in general fund and lottery. $49 is lottery debt service. And so the remaining $61 million, if you will, looks at a reduction of about $11 million. Again, I think that this hits us a particularly hard one, if you will. Second thing is I want to make sure that everybody understands that every agency, including ourselves, have been cut rather dramatically over the last number of years. And so this is not something that I can jump up and down and say I want happen. It is not something that I want to happen. We are evaluating this almost primarily on a return on investment of how many jobs can we actually say and go from there. I desperately do not want any cutbacks if we can in women and minority business services, but I'll ask Lynn Beaton to kind of step into that and suggest where we are with that and see if she can answer Senator Verger's questions.
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, I think there are actually two answers to your question. One is when we're providing funding to the SBDCs and the targeted service providers, what do they do when they turn around and give that funding or assistance to those women and minority businesses? And for that question, we're selecting those targeted providers on a request for proposal competitive basis. Once we have selected them, and that's the total of $900,000 for this biennium, it is in their job to turn around and provide those services to local governments. We get a list of those companies at the end of the biennium, but we're not checking into that. We check with them when we do the criteria up front for that contract. But the place where we do work with women minority businesses is if we have a contract that we as an agency want done, we do send special notice to reach small and women minority businesses. And there's a website that we go through at the state level that then it does notify all businesses that would qualify of the chance to compete for contracts with the state. So on our own contracts, they get a special notification, but when you go through SBDCs and targeted providers, we don't double-check that. We just do the contract up front.
I think it's important to point out, though, for the committee that your SBDCs and your Women and Minority Business Services really are two separate entities, and that your SBDCs provide one function and your Women and Minority Business Services provide a completely different function.
Yes, Mr. Chair, good point. The SBDCs, of course, are really reaching out to all small businesses, and there's the 19 centers around the state, and that's a direct pass-through. They don't have to compete for those dollars. But the targeted services providers really are focused more on women and minority contracts, and that is part of the RFP that we issue with them.
So following up on that question, though, how do you ensure that the state of Oregon isn't getting hoodwinked and you get a male business owner who puts their wife as the primary on the sub-S corporation or on the LLC or even on a partnership and they run it as a female-owned business?
Mr. Chair, it's an interesting question. When the department would issue a request for proposal ourselves, we would be able to check that. But again, when we're going through the other contracts, we don't check that. But part of the contract that we have with the SBDCs and the targeted service providers is that they try to make sure that they're not hoodwinked, as you're putting it.
But I don't know. The SBDCs don't play any role in this.
Right. That's true.
They have no, role in it. It's the other folks.
Good point.
Yeah. Is that, Senator Verger, is this helping you?
I think so. I think that, I was just looking here, it says percent of women-owned business, 13%. 10% of minority-owned business is zero. That's on your second page here. Mm-hmm. Can you explain that a little bit to me?
I'm sorry. Senator, can you tell me what page you're on?
It's just inside of your first business finance program review.
Well, we didn't get it.
It's just a listing of the current biennium.
You know, you really need to get better at reading minds.
Appreciate that. Okay. Okay, Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, this is for the Oregon Business Development Fund, right? So that's one of our loan programs, but that one's not specifically targeted at small business or minority. So that's not a target for this program.
Okay.
But it is a target for the service providers that we're just discussing. I know it gets very confusing, and I apologize, but they're different programs.
Okay, follow up, Mr. Chair.
Please.
What kind of money are we talking about in your contracts with the SBDCs?
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, the total for this biennium is $2.2 million, and again, that is distributed among 9 SBDCs across the state.
19.
I apologize.
I have a question on that. Okay. Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, Lynn, I'd like to follow up with that. Of that $2.2 million, is that the total amount of money that gets loaned, or is that the total amount that's attributed toward this area, including overhead, to manage the, you know, the program?
Mr. Chair, Senator Richardson, we give that entire amount. Representative, I'm sorry, would you like to be a senator today? Representative Richardson, we give that entire amount to the SBDCs. They use approximately 5% of that total for their overhead. The rest they're using for their staffing. So we do get a report from them once a year that tells us how they break down those funds. But all of that is going out to them, although they use some of it for overhead.
That's interesting. As I'd point out to the committee, is if you look at the overall funding of the department, less than 1% goes to SBDCs. But if you talk to the SBDCs, they'll share with you that almost 10% of their job creation come from the service they provide. Now, whether that's accurate or not, I don't know, but that's what they share.
Yeah.
So, let's do another question. Then
I don't have a question. I just want to say I have no suspicion of how the SBDCs are handling the money. I just think that I don't want them to be hoodwinked with people telling them and doing exactly what you've said, but I didn't want to disparage my good friends that. At the SBDCs.
We have with us up here Representative Donna Nelson from McMinnville, and we welcome you, and feel free to join us with any questions that you might have. So why don't we continue forward?
All right. Next on our list is the grant loan program to ensure safe drinking water systems. This is a federal program, primarily with some help from the state. It helps to leverage other funding, meaning the federal funding, and it is aligned, if you will, for the safe drinking water systems, and also on the business development side. Again, if most businesses are going to want a modicum of assurance that the water that they're getting, either for their goods and services or for their products, is safe. If you don't have that, if you have a water system which is flawed, if you will, then you're probably not going to get your chip manufacturers or your, as I say, your beverage manufacturers or whatever. So there is a tie-in, if you will, although it's probably one step removed from jobs and job creation. That's why it's a little lower on our list, but nevertheless, it is there.
But provide for the committee really quick further clarification between SPWF, WWF, and the SDWP.
Okay.
I'm a business owner, and I have a water issue.
I'm sorry. Mr. Chair, the Safe Drinking Water Fund is federal. Those dollars come to the health department, and then we take that money and essentially administer it for them and provide a match.
If I was a food processor, would I potentially have, everything else being equal, would I have access to one of those three programs?
Mr. Chair, yes, I believe that you would.
Okay, thank you.
And, Mr. Chair, I'd like to do one follow-up to a question you asked a minute ago. Although it's very true that the SBDCs don't have to work with minority women-owned businesses specifically, when the survey is done each year, they're surveyed for that. So I still have results for minority women-owned for both SBDCs as well as the targeted service providers.
Right, SBA mandates
right.
That along with you folks. Yeah. Why don't we keep moving forward?
All right. Mr. Chair, the next on our list is the assisted trouble business retention, assist troubled businesses. There's a small amount of money that is allocated toward assisting, if you will, companies that are in trouble. Oftentimes, companies will come to us and the knowledge base isn't there. There's two aspects of it. Oftentimes, one is financial. The other times is the knowledge base. We have a small amount of money that we allocate to try to help businesses that are in trouble. Again, this is not a whole lot of money. It's lottery funds, but we do have some money there in order to hire some people to help small businesses get through, if you will, troubled times, and some advice. Next on our list is the arts. And again, I would suggest to you that perhaps the evaluation that we do on the arts is probably not the appropriate evaluation that we have here, because we have jobs and we have job retention as our primary focus here. And I think that you can easily say that arts contribute to the overall community. That's, I think, not a subject of discussion. But you can also say that arts are a contributor to jobs, particularly the cultural trust side of things. However, in the way that we're evaluating it here, and again, I don't want this to be misrepresented on the fact that we are not interested in the arts. We are. I'm vice chair of the Portland Art Museum, for example. But it is an extremely difficult one sometimes to say we spend X amount of money and X number of jobs are created. I suggest that it should be evaluated in a different way and a very valuable way. But there are jobs that are created to it too. But again, I think that one other factor. This is general fund money, and our instructions were to take 10% out of general fund money also, along with lottery. This is our only general fund allocation, and so the suggestion we had to take 10% out of this because that's the only money that we have from general fund. Ports. Is on our next item, I believe. Excuse me. Grants and loans to ports, that's right. We assist, if you will, the ports in a number of different ways. Some of it is industrial land. I believe there's four or perhaps five areas right now of ports that we're trying to help on the industrial land and certified land process. Another way that we do try to help out the ports is through some lobbying efforts in Washington, D.C., and I think that there's some good anecdotal evidence that this has been extremely successful in the past, and we intend or hope to intend to continue that. You can see the results of that in part because of what the administration sometimes allocation is versus what we actually got. And again, I think that we need a representative voice in Washington, D.C. in order to talk about federal funds coming to our ports also.
Can you break that out a little bit?
You bet.
I see the grant loan, but I don't see the port marketing grant in there.
There are actually, I think, two or three programs on the court, on the ports that we're involved in, and perhaps, Lynn, you can chat about those.
Mr. Chair, yes, we have lumped them into that one line item for purposes of this budget. We did do that.
So we've got the Port Revolving Loan Fund.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the Port Marketing Grant Program.
Mm-hmm.
We have, you got marine navigation below that.
Yeah.
Right. Well, those are the three.
Those are the three.
Right.
Okay.
So two of them we lumped together, and then the third is separate.
And Mr. Chairman, occasionally SP, Special Public Works, can be used in ports, too.
Yeah. Using the ratio analysis that you're talking about in terms of measuring up against job creation, how is it that grants for the arts created more jobs than the Port Revolving Loan Fund, the Port Marketing Fund, with the ports? I'd really be interested in seeing how that played out.
To be honest, Mr. Chair, I think part of the reason for that is simply that those funds, we were a little bit later in getting those contracts out the door, and so I think they haven't yet had a chance to start having the return on jobs that they were going to for this biennium. So I think that's one of the reasons it's a lower number at this time. But
one of the things we'll want to talk about as we get together is staffing for this issue. Because I think if you go back and look at Historical Information Committee, the ports used to have what's called the Ports Division, and they had personnel in place to assist in getting these programs out. And I think today there's someone who's responsible but not dedicated to this initiative.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
So, anyway, why don't we keep moving forward here?
And Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I lost my place. Are we at the Oak Grove? Okay, thank you. Oak Grove is a diversification of the federal funds. Those are almost all gone, I believe. In fact, I don't think there's any more funds coming on the Oak Grove. And so those are federal funds that will flow through the department only. I don't think the state has any participation in that. Traditionally, community assistance is the next one on our list there. Traditionally, some communities have asked for help in terms of investment in their smaller communities and in their retail stores. We, in the past, a few years ago, contracted with one particular person. A couple of years ago, we were directed by the legislature to open that up, in which we do have an RFP that we issue out to see if a company can be helpful in some of our small communities to see if they can't move them along, dress them up a little bit, and inspire a little bit more confidence in the downtown areas that are run down. That is an area that is down there, and as you can kind of tell, there have been some enthusiastic supporters of that, and there are some people that are not quite so enthusiastic.
Just really quick on that community assistance, is the department still funding RDI?
We put that up for bid, Mr. Chair. And it could be RDI or it could be another organization that will bid on it and get that bid.
Is it public information as to who else bid on that?
I believe so, yeah.
Can you just share that with me at
sure,
some point?
Sure, you bet.
Okay.
ODF is the next one, I believe, on our list. And Lynn, maybe you could pick up the ODF, if you will.
I know. I'm sorry, where?
Unallocated.
Oh, the unallocated yeah. Dollars. These, Mr. Chair, these are just lottery bonds that have not been specifically allocated to other programs. So that is why they are kept separately, because they're not assigned to one of the others at this time. And actually, Cora, perhaps you could surprise.
Sure. We'll just bounce around.
We will.
Again, Cora Parker for the record. I don't want to overstep, but I think these are actually some lottery funds, direct lottery funds, and some lottery bonds dollars that are not specifically allocated to another program because they're left there for purposes of flexibility. For example, and I'll start to tell a story, Lynn can correct me if I get out in front of myself. I think we had an issue with brownfields earlier this biennium, which we thought that it would qualify for a portion of the issue, would qualify for brownfields abatement at some point. We didn't know specifically until a couple of different points in the process had been hit, and so the commission was asked to allocate some of these unallocated funds in the meantime, and then there was a reconciliation process that came on board later on. It's really an issue of flexibility. It's a very small portion of the department's budget if you look at the dollars that are unallocated there.
Why don't we do this? If you could just get us additional information.
I'll provide some examples.
Operations.
Our operations and overview, Mr. Chairman, like everybody else, have been challenged over the last few years. We have reduced our staffing size about a third, and it has shown, quite frankly, of some of the cuts that we have made. We have some gaps in our performance that you are perhaps aware of, but I will tell you that they're in the contract area in particular. We have been asked to do more contracts, 566 contracts out the door. They are more difficult, and we were doing it with two people at one particular point. And as you can kind of tell, that doesn't work very well. We added a third person about a year ago, and we're about ready to add a fourth person by juggling some money around. But that comes at the expense, quite frankly, of sometimes some middle managers or other staff strength that you might be able to use that we need to really kind of go to this particular area because this is our most critical area right now.
How come you didn't come to the e-board to get some additional folks to help on that?
I will tell you quite frankly, and this is just me speaking, but the e-board, in my opinion, was being besieged by people all over the place, and I thought that our story was somewhat typical of some of the other agencies that were going through the same thing, so why was I particularly special? And so I just kind of said, well, if we can take some money over to here and I can do without one more person here, well, then that's what we'll try to do. So that's the reason, to tell you the truth. I just felt that everybody, quite frankly, was going to go to the e-board and ask for money, and this is what the legislature had suggested that we operate with, and that's what we'll do.
That's an honest answer. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I could go back and maybe give you a better answer to a question you just asked about the difference in why would arts be above courts. The reason for that is arts brings in a lot of leverage, which is one of the three legs of our stool that we were using as we found return on investment. So a lot of federal dollars can come into the state for arts if we put up a relatively small amount of money from the state perspective, whereas courts doesn't have that leverage. It's just got the jobs.
And so that was, you can see the political sensitivity of placing ports near the bottom of the list.
Mr. Chair, I do indeed.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, as you could imagine, there is, like every agency, has received a lot of concern, I'm sure, by the people that were ranked on the lower side, and this agency is, or this department is not any different from that. There has been a lot of comment from the ports, from our film and video friends, from our arts friends, from everybody about why don't you love us? And the fact is we do, and we think that they're extremely important, and we hope that they will be funded.
Would it be possible with operations to provide the committee with some more breakout there? I don't know if we can do that today, but if you could get it to us, I would appreciate that because I'd like to see how that $26 million, between other funds and lottery funds is broken out.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, if I can clarify, you'd like the department to attempt to basically allocate those dollars across the different programs. Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, members, if what you're asking for is how that $26 million is allocated within operations, it's on the next page.
Just have to read.
Thank you, Robin.
That answers that question. Thank you. Why don't we keep moving forward?
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Morse.
Had just a little bit of a pause there, so it gave me a chance. Thank you. Marty, the Oregon Arts Commission and the Oregon Cultural Trust, just looking at the assigned positions and their respective budgets, one seems to be inverted over the other in terms of numbers of people. I see six positions for $3.4 million and two positions for $5.1 million. Could you provide some explanation as to what's happening in those?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, I will ask Cora, if I could, to get a response there because we are not intimately involved in the arts organizations and the oversight of it. It passes through our department, as you might know, but perhaps Cora could answer that.
Mr. Chair and Senator Morse, other members of the committee as well, the Oregon Cultural Trust, basically the two positions were two positions and not quite two FTE that are outlined there, are for purposes of administering that trust only. Those positions were transferred from the Secretary of State's office during the last biennium, and at the time they were transferred, it truly was a what do we have in this agency, and now let's move it to this other agency in an attempt to merge some programs and basically build off of the staff that were already existing in the Arts Commission to leverage some of those existing positions in order to run the Cultural Trust. That's a model that we've been working on in this biennium, and I think we'll continue to ask the Arts Commission and the Cultural Trust through the Arts Commission to work off of. That's not to say that there's not at least been noted that either of those bodies could stand to have some additional positions at some point in time, but we're really asking them to continue to explore that leveraging, which was the purpose of combining the two in the first place. So,
and Mr. Chair, if I might add, the statutes restrict the amount of administrative expense that can occur out of the trust, and then also restrict the amount of grants that can be allocated out of the trust in any calendar year, I believe. And so what you really are looking at here is primarily the amount of money that's in the trust fund, with a very small amount of money going towards any kind of administrative expense. And that's why you have such a low staff to dollar ratio.
And just as a follow-up, Mr. Chair, thank you. I guess specifically my question is, if you can manage 5.1 million with two people, why does it take six people to manage 3.4?
And again,
so that's my question.
Yeah, and that makes, I would ask the same question myself if I was sitting in your place. And I think that goes back to, we had an existing program. It was obvious, or I don't want to say it was obvious, but it was starting to look like the two positions that were sitting there in the former agency were not being able to, on their own, manage that amount of dollars. And so what the thought was, if we move those two positions into a program that already has some existing infrastructure, that they can work together and really leverage off of one another to manage that program. So it's almost a little bit of a miss. I don't think you could take the Cultural Trust with just those two positions and its body of work, set them aside, and that they would run the way that they're running now. They really are leveraging off of what the Arts Commission is doing itself through its everyday course of work. The executive director, for example, of the Arts Commission is integral in the work that's going on with the Cultural Trust as well. They leverage off of the finance, the budget and finance work that's done on a daily basis through the Arts Commission. It is also helping the Cultural Trust. So the two positions, 1.92, I think, FTE that are focused and identified there are specific to the Cultural Trust, but they're really leveraging some of the services off of the Arts Commission as well. I mean, that was the attempt in moving those bodies there. Does that help to address the issue?
Yes, it does. Thank you. But one just follow-up question. Who do these people report to?
I believe to the Cultural Trust board, and then informally to the Arts Commission director as well. So it depends on if you're talking operationally or that more direct statutorily sort of line.
So we have them in your budget, Marty, but you have no line authority whatsoever.
I'm not aware that I do.
Yeah, I clarified it. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Morse, if I can address that a little bit as well, because we've had those conversations. I think when the Arts Commission was brought into the department some years ago, it's probably been a decade or so now, again, the same thought process then was being able to leverage some of those infrastructure sort of items. So, for example, the budget, payroll, those sort of other infrastructure items that if the Arts Commission and or the Cultural Trust sat outside by themselves, they would have to duplicate or at least purchase from somewhere outside. And here you've got an infrastructure basically that exists within the Economic Development Department that when you talk economies of scale, you can purchase a slice of that instead of having to create and replicate sort of large systems yourself.
Any other questions of the committee? Well, we're halfway through. I have a couple more budget questions, and then we're going to move to performance measures. With Representative Nelson here today, I want her to know that this budget committee is asking good, tough questions.
That's what I'm
I want her to be able to go back to the caucus. And so I, I actually have a couple questions I think I'm going to need you folks to get back to me with answers. And so why don't I just give them and then you can respond back. You folks have an internal auditor. Can you send to me any information on internal program investigations that have been conducted by the internal auditor and what the outcomes were of those?
Mr. Chair, yes, we can. But to be clear, we need to tell you we did have the position of internal auditor and frankly decided that we probably had more need of a contract specialist and that we could contract outside the department for an auditor. So we do have the findings of the auditor that we can deliver to you, but at this point we're going out for contract for bid to get another auditor so that we could reuse that position for contracts.
I just want to know what the internal person looked at and what their response was. Can you send to me a copy of your cost allocation plans for the department?
Mr. Chair, I'm sure we can. Can you be a little more specific about exactly
why don't we get together on that, because I have a whole list of stuff on there. But what I would like to see, let's move to a different question on that. We'll talk about that. Is on page 113, here you've got the operations broken out by 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 categories. Can I have your support service charge back plan on these?
Mr. Chair, again, can you be more specific? I'm sorry. What exactly are you asking for?
How are these? I want to know how administration is being paid for out of these. Who's paying the administration?
Mr. Chair, yes, we can provide that to you.
My understanding is it's called a support service chargeback plan.
Mr. Chair, do refer to it as support services or central operations, but the back plan was a new one for me, but I think I understand. We can get
these are two terms that I got straight from DAS. I sat down with them, and they said, here's what you want to be asking. And so
Mr.
one's
Chair,
called the support service chargeback plan. The other's the cost allocation plan.
Okay.
And then also, Director, you were talking about the need to move positions, and I fully understand that. But I would like to know of any self-financed reclassification packages that you folks did without legislative authority. Who'd you move where without coming to us?
Mr. Chair, all right, we will provide that.
Let's see if I have any. Oh, and then can you send the committee just a breakdown of any consultants that you've hired?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? See, Senate Representative Nelson, we ask budget questions here.
I'm impressed.
I'm going to go back to caucus saying we ask.
I thought
questions.
It would be this thorough. I'm glad.
So
I would like to just let him know, Mr.
Please,
Chair,
please.
Representative or Director Brantley, I'm going to be putting together a PICS organizational request so that we can get kind of a breakdown of the 106 employees and where they're at and you know, job descriptions and all that, and I'll have that by the end of the day or tomorrow.
Good.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, that's fine. I am eager to engage all of you into an analysis, and in particular on the international side, Representative Richardson, I know you have a particular interest in that area, and I want to make sure that you are included in the discussions as to where we're going and how we're going to get there, too. So just for your information, you're on the list for me to contact on that.
Thank you.
Why don't we, unless there's any other questions, why don't we move to performance measures? We've got how much time? 55 minutes? No, I keep forgetting how much time we have.
Mr. Cameron, are you going to leave the low priorities for now?
I'm sorry.
Are you leaving the low priorities for now?
Did you want?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we.
I wanted to just ask one quick question.
Of course, please.
All right.
I'm sorry. I thought we went through there.
Why do you have ports as your low priority? Is it because of the federal connection?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berger, that's exactly it. We felt that there are ways that we can continue the funding of the ports. It's not because they're not important, but there are ways that we could continue to perhaps fund the ports through special public works or other things to make the ports whole if there was a reduction there. And so we felt that was a way that we could get to them, and if we had to take the cuts, we could hopefully hold them somewhat whole anyway, if not whole.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chairman.
So business retention actually had more job creation than the ports?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I think it has more return on investment, not necessarily more jobs per se. But if you're counting jobs, tax, income tax generated, and then leverage, that's why it would be lower. So we counted all three of those things for return on investment for each one.
Wow. Thank you. Now, I'm operating off of page 111. And according to what I see, the last category we need to talk about is lottery debt service, and then we're going to move to performance measures, I guess. Are we all on the same page on that? I guess so.
The debt service, as you know, goes to the industrial lands piece. And without that leveraging, if you will, we would not have an industrial lands program. I again want to reiterate the fact that we calculated and specifically designated a particular vision 2 years ago, and it was not random, it was by priority, and it was to create jobs. And a part of that aspect of it was the industrial lands piece. Without that, we don't have an industrial lands piece. We run out of money in approximately 2 years' time, and all industrial lands goes away at that point. If that should happen, we would have no Google, we would have no Lowe's, we would have no other announcements that might or might not be coming forth that are all on certified lands that weren't certified before.
Why don't we move to performance measures?
Why don't you start off?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm going to be looking at two things here. One was actually page 19 out of the book because it's probably the quick little overview summary of our 9 performance measures. So it's sometimes a handy thing just to keep beside you because the performance measure forms are not always the easiest to maneuver. The second thing that we'll be looking at is the tab behind the appendices section, labeled, appropriately enough, performance measures. And so I can walk you through what those 9 are, if you would like. All right. Overall, the numbers 1 and 2 performance measures, as we have discussed before, deal with number of jobs created and number of jobs retained. And it is a priority for us to have each of our programs, where possible, be able to demonstrate both creation and retention of jobs. So on the page 19, what you're seeing is the aggregate. You're seeing the total of targeted jobs created and retained for the current biennium, as well as the actual, which shows us where you are now, and then our targets for 05 and 07. Mr. Chair, let me ask you, since we have walked through this document before, generally, exactly how much information would you like at this point?
Oh, I don't know. Why don't I open that up to the committee?
There's a reference to a page number, Mr. Chair. 19, right?
Mom. Yeah, page 19.
In the agency overview.
Oh, thank you.
Way back, 19.
I apologize, Senator Morse. What I was doing was saying we have an overview of the performance measures at page 19 in the book, but then we have the more detailed progress board reports in the performance measures section of the appendix.
Thank you.
So I was just giving you both of those.
What I think I would like to see for the committee is taking the different programs by the 3 categories that was mentioned by the director, mm-hmm. and getting to us kind of a breakdown of this mm-hmm. by those categories.
Okay.
So that way when the county, say, rural investment is doing this, the evidence either supports it or doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow I think we need to see that.
Okay. All right, Mr. Chair. Probably the best way to do that is for me to simply go through and read to you what we've got in each of our programs, domestic business development, innovation economy, et cetera. As you recall, at the very top of each of those sections, we give the overall target for job performance for the department, but that we explain what that program itself has contributed to meeting that goal.
When you do that, how feasible is it for you to tell us of the different tools in your toolbox, which is contributing to those measures?
Mr. Chair, so you're trying to get a comparison of which programs maybe are doing the most in terms of straight job creation?
Or
what we're asking?
I'm sorry, and maybe I need to follow a little bit here, but you know, let's take a look at number three where it says new sales of assisted customers.
Mm-hmm.
Which of the tools in your toolbox are leading you to achieve that performance measure?
Understand. Yeah. Mr. Chair, for that one specifically, it's the international division that we're talking about.
Okay.
So it's the international division's efforts to work with Oregon companies and market them overseas.
Well, why don't we start with number one, and as you go through each one, just share with us those tools in the toolbox that are most inclined to be achieving that performance measure, and maybe it's all of them. You may say number one, all of them do it.
Mr. Chair, number one, all of them do it.
Yes.
No, actually, for number one, really it is most of our programs except for some of the infrastructure programs. Although we do get construction jobs from infrastructure, that's not obviously the main purpose of those funds. So for performance measures one, jobs created, and two, jobs retained, we're really looking at all of our programs now asking to give us that information. The third performance measure, new sales of assisted clients, as we just discussed, this performance measure is provided solely by our international division, which is doing marketing of Oregon companies overseas and matching companies up with opportunities for selling overseas or outside of the state, actually. So internationally, not just necessarily overseas. The fourth performance measure. Yes.
Yeah, Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, Lynn, how do you go about determining the accuracy of these numbers?
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, it's different for different parts of the program. For the jobs created and retained, we're determining accuracy by going to the employment department, and we're comparing the numbers from employment department against what the companies individually give us. So we do that comparison, and so that's how we match that up and ensure that we've got accurate numbers. For the new sales of assistant clients with international, I believe that when they work with companies, they get information directly from those companies and keep track. We have not, I don't believe, gone back to employment to verify those because it's sales. It's not actually jobs created.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Richardson, we contact after, let's say, that we go to a trade fair or whatever, and then those companies go home. We contact those companies and say, what is the response of yours? Have you increased sales? If so, by how much? And they get back to us and tell us those results. And it's my understanding that's what you see tabulated here. I think that they are... sometimes difficult to get. Sometimes companies are not willing to give you the sales figures or particularly increases of sales figures. But we do try to get that as one of the measures of what we try to do.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, would you like me to continue or another question on that one?
Continue.
Okay. Performance measure number four, number of new industrial sites and acres certified as project ready. This is the measure dealing with our industrial lands initiative. And very specifically, we're just saying how many sites have we gotten certified and what's the total acreage of those sites combined. And as you put it, the tools in the toolbox that we're using here are really two things. We're using some of the special public works funds specifically to help us do work to get those sites ready to go, to get the infrastructure dealt with, to get environmental issues resolved, et cetera. But we're also using our staff in providing technical assistance to landowners and businesses as they go through the certification process.
As you're developing new industrial sites, are you helping the communities or the participating parties to not only develop the site but also have management plans for the operation of the sites? Is there a long-term strategy to understand how to keep the thing operating 5 years from now?
Mr. Chairman, I think that it's been an interesting process by which we are developing the industrial sites. We, again, remember that we asked the commercial field, the private sector, to tell us which ones were commercially viable and which ones not. So I want to make sure that everybody understands it's not just our whim that we said this one is we're going to do and this one isn't. We had two different independent audit verifiers say that this is what we're going to do. Once that happens, then there were 42 different criteria for each site. And we have a book on every site to going through all of those 42 criteria to make sure that they were met. As they were checked off by a lot of different agencies, not just ourselves, but a lot of different agencies, then they became certified, if you will, and ready to be developed within a six-month period of time. So at that particular point, we have engaged the local communities going through this. It's been an educational, if you will, situation for the local communities to learn how to do this and why to do this and its importance. And sometimes we found some resistance of saying, look, you know, we don't want to do this, or and that's fine if those communities didn't want to engage in that. But for the most part now, people see the value of it and are anxious to kind of get on the list, if you will, and go forth. That knowledge base, I think, will carry them for the next 5 years as to how to develop and what we're looking for. I hope that answers your question.
It does a little bit. I'm going to go here for the question in one moment. But there's a big difference between developing and operating. And I'm just curious, what's the safety net for the state if Fossil Oregon's industrial site doesn't work?
Mr. Chairman, let's assume that that site is sold, at which point, you know, then it goes to somebody else to operate. And so your question then is, what about the other pieces of land that might be on an industrial site, and how do you market those and get them ready to be sold also?
Well, there's two parts to development. One is the construction. The other is operating the thing once you build it. And what I'm concerned about, or raising the issue is I think we have the ability to construct it. I'm not sure with all these multiple industrial sites we're going to have the expertise and the talent to operate it. And from a person who comes from a port industrial background, there's a big difference between building and operating. And I'm just curious who will pick up the pieces if one of these doesn't work out.
Mr. Chair, let me help clarify the question, see if I know where you're going. The department is talking about the certification process of the land itself and that it's ready to be purchased or leased or whatever by a group that's coming in with a business opportunity, whatever it may be. So they're talking about the certification process itself, and I think that's what the director was speaking to. What you're talking to is once a company or private individual, whoever it may be, comes in and purchases that land or leases it or whatever it may be, then what is the process to make sure that it's a viable operation on an ongoing basis? And if I think I'm understanding correctly the process here, just because a piece of land has been deemed certified industrial site ready, that an industry could come in and could purchase that wholly with absolutely no other financing assistance from the department, in which case that would be completely 100% private sector leverage. The state wouldn't necessarily have any additional risk in that property. In fact, their role would only have been in getting that piece of property up to that site certified place so that company could come in and put their private sector leverage in. Now, if a company comes in that uses additional state economic development financing opportunities, then whatever opportunity it is that they have used, it's going to go through those same standards that they would have gone through whether it was on a industrial certified site or not. So if
I just think the committee needs to be aware that
absolutely
there's more than one type of project here, mm-hmm. and if a community goes out and does special public works financing and mixes it in with some water and wastewater financing and brings in some rural development financing.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You may have one heck of an industrial park, but at some point the bill's going to come due and someone's going to have to service the debt.
But I also want to make it clear, and again, Marty, feel free to step in if I'm overstepping here, but I also want to make it clear that just because a site itself has been deemed certified or ready for development does not necessarily mean that a community has gone that next step and built something there, sort of that build it and they will come mentality. The site is there and is ready. It's gone through the list of 42 requirements or whatever the number is, so that it's ready for that development. It's not that we're going out and we're building a number of empty industrial sites waiting for someone to come. We're saying this site is here if you, business A from wherever you are, want to come in. So don't want to leave you with the impression that we're building these sites with that, we hope they'll come sort of mentality, leaving communities on the hook for payback of those, because that's not what the department is doing at all.
Well, I'm going to go to Senator Morris in one second, and I don't want to monopolize, but I want to follow up with it. Explain to me why this department should be financially responsible to help get through these 40 different hoops. How come DEQ and Water Resources and ODF&W couldn't put a portion of this bill to...
Mr. Chair, actually the other agencies are involved. Each of the agencies of the Economic Revitalization Team has a role in site certification. And predominantly what they are giving is staff expertise to go out on the site, to check it, to check documentation, to find out what's on the site and what might need to be done. So I think it's quite fair to say that each of those agencies is putting in some time, and it is true that we're doing most of the funding, as we were directed to by House Bill 2011, but each of the agencies has a role to play in actually certifying sites.
Oh, sure, make us responsible. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The key performance number four, we have to date 11 sites and 916 acres. Would I find back on page 111, would I find in that number attributable to this effort called the Industrial Lands Policy Package? Is that what we're spending?
Mr. Chair, that's what we're talking about, but actually we have 24 certified sites just as of last week. So the numbers have been updated. So I'm not exactly sure what you're looking at there, but 24 sites is the right number that are currently certified.
Oh, I see a budget, governor's budget, looking forward of 61 million dollars, and looking back we have performance of so far of 11 sites plus more. What would be the cost achieved for those that have transpired, and then looking forward at the 1800 acres and well, you've got a number for each year. I guess the point of my question, Mr. Chairman, is it looks like we're spending a lot of money to certify sites. Maybe you could reflect on...
Mr. Chair, Senator Morse, it really depends on the site. And to be honest with you, we've not really spent a lot of state money so far because we were starting with the low-hanging fruit, as we were putting it. So we were trying to deal with sites that maybe didn't have a major transportation problem or need an interchange or lots of work done. In the future, though, we are expecting that if we're going to be dealing with trying to get those most marketable sites, the sites of good size and prime location, ready for certification, that's probably going to require some investment. And that was one of the reasons we were asking for that bonding authority. That's true.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Morris, also, I think that we keep a close eye on that return of investment, and while it will be escalating up a little bit, we want to make sure that we're going to get our money back and this is well invested. And so we try to break out every site, where we are, how many jobs are created, assess valuation then, assess valuation now, and go through all of those hoops. And so, and we can provide that for you with every industrial site.
I guess, Mr. Chairman, to editorialize just a little bit, it seems strange that we would be investing so much money for just so very few sites. And if you compound that and look at all the sites in Oregon, and if you have to apply the same kind of exceptional effort just to certify them so that they're ready to go, I think that commentary speaks very loudly about where we find ourselves and how difficult it is maybe to get things out of the ground and built.
Mr. Chair, Senator Morse, I think you're right, and I think it was because local communities thought they really had sites ready to go, because they thought, we got a piece of land, somebody will come and build on it. And we would bring companies out to look at those properties, and the companies would say, wait a minute, you haven't dealt with your infrastructure, your wetlands, or brownfields, et cetera, and they'd walk away. And it was because that was happening quite frequently over the last few years that we developed the program in the first place, and that House Bill 2011 was passed. Because we're realizing that to truly be competitive, you've got to have all that information these days on those sites, and you've got to be able to allow for development to happen pretty quickly. And yes, it can be expensive.
What's interesting, though, committee, is if the state of Oregon is having this much difficulty trying to work through this process, just imagine what a private sector developer, first time out of the chute, would be having.
Yeah, yeah. Mr. Chairman, I think that...
Excuse me, I was going to go to Senator Berger.
Yes, I'm a XYZ company, and I go and I come to you and talk about one of the sites that I'm interested in, and you say it's a certified site. Does that mean that I'm not going to have to do a transportation study and that I'm not going to have to do an environmental impact study? And are all of those, what's that 42 criteria assure me of? And I've got a project, and it's ready. So when you tell me it's project ready, does that mean that I can start building within 90 days?
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, you'd be able to start constructing within 6 months at the outside is the goal. You would not have to do that environmental analysis. You would not have to do an archaeological survey, a wetlands delineation, a brownfields assessment. All of that has already been done for those sites. You would probably have to do some sort of traffic assessment, because when we got the site certified, we didn't know exactly how big you would be.
Right.
And so that information would have to be provided by the company, and would be one of the things that we would need to work with in that six-month window.
Okay. Follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Follow-up.
Okay, I'm the property owner, and I own the industrial site, and I want to get it certified. So I want to go and I tell you I want this certified, and you see that I have wetlands that need to be mitigated, and et cetera, et cetera. Do you have me do that work and pay for it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, we try to split that cost with you. We're not able or willing to completely pay for it, because we want to see involvement and dedication on the part of the property owner. But we do have funds set aside to try to help do some of, like, the wetlands work and the brownfields work. And we try to get you a better bang for the buck, because we're hiring consultants who are then available to us and can go out and do a number of assessments at once. So you wouldn't have to go through the trouble of hiring somebody and screening consultants, but we would expect you to put up some of the cash.
And one quick follow-up, what percentage of cash would I have to put up?
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, right now we don't have a specific percentage set. We wanted to get through this first round and try to work with the property owners and see what seemed reasonable, and we haven't yet finished establishing that.
Okay, just before we go, just to follow up on her question, so there are no projects that have been certified? I mean, we know that certain have, so how about the last three or four projects? What would be a rough average, just to give her an idea? Are we talking about 5% or 50%?
Mr. Chair, what do you mean not certified? I'm sorry.
My understanding of Senator Verger's question was, what is the percentage that a property owner would have to pay? And the answer was, I can't tell you. And so does that mean because there's been none?
I apologize, Mr. Chair. No, we actually have quite a few, and I even have the list. What I was saying was, we don't have a set percentage yet that we have established. So what we're doing is working with property owners case by case to look at what needs to happen and going from there. Does that answer the question?
Well, no, it answers the process, but doesn't answer the question. Would you give her some idea on recent ones what the percentage was, just so there's some idea what kind of percentage we're talking about that is a participation? Hmm.
I'm sorry, I'm hearing whispering behind me. Someone else, Mr. Chair, may be wanting to answer more than I do. Well, yeah, but how much? Yes.
Mr. Chair, perhaps we can give you a list of that if we could. We obviously are shooting for 45 certified sites by June. We have 24 of them done now. Let's break out the list and give it to you, if that's okay, Mr. Chair, Senator Verger.
Yeah.
Is that acceptable, Senator Verger?
That's fine. I know we have to be competitive. I think we just have to be careful, Mr. Chairman, on how much we invest in someone else's business. I own a business. It had hidden tanks in the ground. We were notified of that, but the former property owner had to pay for them. So the former property owner could not be found, and yet it had to be fixed. And the price tag after 1 week was $30,000. So I think that in fairness to other people in business, we have to realize that the state should not be subsidizing other people and leave some people left to pay their own way. I think I agree in being competitive, but I like the fact that you're not fixing those industrial sites, but you're expecting people to come up with funding for those sites, and I would expect that the person that owns that property should come up with a pretty good site, because you've got to realize they are going to be the winner.
Mm-hmm. So if we have a list, that would be very helpful.
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, we can definitely get you the list. I'm sorry, because what I've got here are just the costs the state paid in, so I don't have the cost share percentage. These ranges, just in case you're interested, range anywhere from $2,000. Most are actually $3,000, $4,000, total for us, because those were the costs of doing the different assessments, the environmental assessments. The most expensive we have on this one on this is $37,000 for the Port of Tillamook. But they range again from 2, 3, 4, 5 predominantly up to that as a high. But we will get you the percentages paid by the property owners in addition to this information.
Thank you. Senator Johnson.
Following along the same line of questioning, I think a number of us watched the bill come through the session the last time and thought, this is great. We're going to get some sites certified that have had difficulty and maybe cut down some of the regulatory hurdles. The more this has unfolded, the less confidence I have in it. And I think I would like, with the chair's permission and with the professional staff's permission, to be very explicit in what I'm asking for. You now have a history of 24 sites. You know who the owners were. You know what your costs were. If this program is being done responsibly, you ought to know what their costs are. And I would like each one of those for all 25 sites. Some are going to be public ownership. I know that you have a couple of ports involved, but I'd like also the private ownership. And I think one of the things that we don't have to solve today, but it's certainly something that I'd like to commend for the committee's consideration, and that is, how do you get in the queue? Senator Verger's got a site, Senator Morris has got a site, and I've got a site. And Representative Nelson has a site. How do you pick which one of our sites is the best? What are your objective criteria? All four of us tell you we're going to create 300 jobs. All four of us tell you we're going to have 200,000 square feet under one roof. All of us tell you we need this, that, and the other thing. I'd like to see the criteria by which the sites come forward. And I frankly, this is the first time that I've heard it, and I think it's enormously worrisome that we don't know exactly what the process for sharing the costs is. And what's equitable about the fact that you pay for 78% of Representative Nelson's rehab on her site and you pay for 2% on Senator Verger's?
Oh, that's good.
So I think that this was a noble undertaking, but this is the first time that it has really hit me how, kind of for lack of a better word, at least the way it's being described, loosey-goosey the whole thing kind of is. And if that is a complete misunderstanding on my part, I beg to be corrected.
Mr. Chairman, if I could. Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, the first part of your question of how do you get into the queue was a very sensitive one, I thought, from the very beginning. And so there was kind of an olly-olly oxen-free of industrial lands, large-scale industrial lands, and I believe there was about 150 or 160 that were filtered down through the BDOs and other people forwarded and to a group that was recommended in 2011. In fact, asked in 2011 that I appoint that group, which it was done. And this group is a professional group that has either a great deal of knowledge or a large body of knowledge.
Right. I think, if I can interrupt you, Mr. Brantley, that in the questioning in the last committee, I asked for who those folks were.
Right. And we have that for you.
Good.
So that was the first pass. These were commercial developers. And then after it was determined what are the most commercially viable ones, again, and we took their word for it, not ours. And so that's how people got into the queue, was because the private sector said, these are the ones that'll move. And at that point, then, we went through the process and then hired, again, and I think I mentioned this before, another party, a verifier, if you will. And we had approximately 42 different criteria. This verifier came out and said, yes, the wetlands is taken care of. Yes, the transportation questions are taken care of. So this person is a site selector and came out and verified that everything is done, at which point the book is closed and we can say, okay, this site is going to be ready to go according to the verifier in 6 months' time. And so that's how people got into the queue. Again, we tried to rely upon the private sector for that advice, if you will.
And I understand that, and actually saw, Mr. Chair, with your permission, saw some of the paperwork as the selection emerged, and in many respects, that part of the process is okay. Now we get to the money part of the process. And if the same documentation and the same objectivity exists on the money side, I welcome hearing it.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, I do believe it's not quite as loosey-goosey as perhaps it's suggested. I think that we all have an idea of the right expenditures and the right, but we will get to that documentation.
And the final point, just to put an absolute exclamation point on it for both Senator Verger and me, is when private benefit inures, how's that calculated? It's different if the Port of Tillamook owns it than it is if Betsy Johnson owns it, and I'm just curious how you calculate that private inurement.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, Senator Morse.
A follow-up question. Just looking at the budget, we're projecting $61 million in the governor's budget for 3,600 acres. Am I correct to divide $61 million by 3,600 acres to get some kind of a budgeted per acre public subsidy?
Yes.
So that's $17,000 an acre?
I'm not sure about the public subsidy aspect of it. Because some of those are loans that are going to be, in fact, almost all of them are loans that are going to be paid back at a certain point. Now, is that a subsidy? Perhaps it is. But we expect to be paid back for most of that. Does that answer your question?
Okay, I guess I'm not tracking with
Mr. Chair, Senator Morse, actually, all costs here are not created equal. We would be probably more willing to put in more money to a highly marketable site that has more problems that need to be addressed, and would probably put less funding into a site that's located in a less desirable area off transportation corridors that doesn't have as many problems. So we can't just sort of do a straight across the board. We've tried that and realized it really varies depending on the types of problems you're trying to fix with the dollars.
Okay. I guess my question.
Please follow up.
Pardon for being thick-skulled here.
No,
is the $61 million loan money? Or is it grant money?
No,
it's loan.
It's loan.
Loan money.
Yeah.
So presumably when the land is sold and it's repaid.
That is correct.
Okay, well that makes a whole lot of difference.
I misunderstood that entirely too. So where you were talking with Senator Verger and the least expensive was $2,000 out of your agency, the most expensive was $37,000 at the Port of Tillamook Bay. The expectation is the $37,000 will be paid back from the Port of Tillamook Bay at the point that they get a client there who's developing jobs. And
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, that is correct. However, I want to be really clear. In this very first round of certified projects, we were granting some of the smaller amounts, like the $2,000 or $3,000 amounts, to do a wetlands assessment and brownfields assessment just to get the process started. So for this first round, we did do some small grants. But yes, over time, the intent is to have this completely be a loan program and will be paid back once the site is in production.
Good.
And to follow up, Mr. Chairman?
Please.
Do we have a sense of what kind of discount from LIBOR or Prime that we would be charging?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morse, right now I don't, but I could probably get that from the manager of that program. I bet he could supply that information.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Morse. I think that will depend on when we sell the bonds, too. There's a linkage to how we sell the bonds themselves and how that's all, you know, so if we get a great deal on the specific bonds, we may be able to pass a great deal through to the borrowers of this program.
I'd like to follow up on that really quick. Several comments have been made that when someone comes onto the property or is ready to buy the property, that's when the loan will be paid back. If I requested copies of the notes on these, would they match up with those statements?
Mr. Chair, I would certainly hope so, yes.
Okay. We all would hope so.
I definitely hope so, and I think they do, yes.
Well, the concern I'm going with this is I want to make sure that we're not putting the Port of Tillamook Bay or the City of Fossil in situations where they're going to be having debt service requirements that are based upon an assumption that's not going to play out. And the state of Oregon then is going to be in a situation of either restructuring debt at a loss to the taxpayers of Oregon, or create a situation where the 480 citizens of Fossil, Oregon are going to figure out how to pay off a major piece of debt service for them.
Understand.
Representative Richardson, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not to be redundant, Marty Lynn or Cora, but who's directing where you go? And in our economic committee, we understood there were 33 sites ready to go. Now here there are 24 today. But anyway, who directed, where you went? Because there was no process. You know, for example, no one talked to my county commissioners, and we're desperate. There's no concept of let's go where the greatest unemployed are who needs us the most. So I'm just curious, as I look at that map with those sites, who directed where you went and how much you spent? Went and spent. That's pretty good.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, the process started, as you might remember, in Senate Bill 2011. And that bill directed us to get a number of certified sites ready to go. And what we thought at that time is it's very important for the commercial market to dictate where those sites should be. Among the other stipulations was that it should be a large industrial site, 25 acres or more. And then again, what occurred is that there were a whole body of proposals put forth in terms of sites. It was not looked upon as geographically even. It wasn't. We just wanted to know what sites were the best ones to get going for the best amount of money going. And so that's the way that it was determined. There has been some comment regarding Eastern Oregon and some areas of Eastern Oregon and the coast and some other places that aren't on that first group, if you will. But it was the private sector who looked at this and said, these are the most commercially viable ones based upon a whole number of criteria for a large 25-acre or more site. And at that point, we said, okay, let's roll up our sleeves then and see. Let's move the process forward. So we relied upon the private sector to do this for us. And again, what we did then after those sites were selected and we went through the process, we had another person come in and verify the fact that, yes, this is what you have done and this is correct.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Please.
Were you given some incentive from these locations? Because nobody talked to anybody in my two counties. And that I represent. So I'm just trying to understand that I can see that map right now in my
Mr.
presence.
Chair.
I can see 600 acres at Bend that, you know, are sitting there with nothing happening. Used to belong to the federal government. I'm just seeing these sites, and I'm just wondering why the ones were chosen, because we haven't moved. We were hoping we'd move Lowe's onto one in Lebanon or something, but. But we really haven't used those. So my question is the best use of money here, or is the best use of money direct to the counties and their industrial promotion groups? For example, You know, we have enterprise zones in my counties. We have industrial sites already in my counties. But nothing appeared on the map, and I just can't quite get it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, I assure you that there is no incentives provided to get anybody, you know, on a map or not on a map.
No, I'm not. I want to correct that, Mr. Chair. I think you're thinking I mean financial. I'm just saying, is there an employment base, a business going out of business I don't know about? Why did we choose those?
Well, there are absolutely certain criteria that we used as going in. And, for example, if it was not inside an urban growth zone, if it was outside of that, then we deemed that probably wasn't going to be decided within a 6 month to 2 year time period politically, unless somebody indicated that zone was going to be moved out. So with the possibilities then of us being developed to be developing that particular piece of land soon was realistic. The chances are were no, because either the signals that we got were that they had no interest in expanding that zone, or that there was not a willing seller, or that there's a lot of other criteria that kind of went along with that. So all of those reasons, along with others, sometimes certain areas didn't need a certified site or industrial land. They had plenty of it already.
Can I just ask, follow up just real quickly? One little tiny question. The reason I'm asking this is because our transportation infrastructure is so lousy in this state, but yet I see these sites, but no way, you know, to get the product or the services to the clients, and I'm concerned about, you know, why we chose them. If you just said we chose them because there's an intermodal transportation system, I would have said thank you very much and I'm out of here. But we didn't.
Well, that's part of it.
Let's go.
Okay. Excuse me. Can I? I probably won't get invited back.
Why don't the three of you arm wrestle out in the foyer? We're gonna move. We've got 11 minutes. Let's move through these performance measures as quick as we can. We had time, and we've kind of lost it here.
All right. Here we go. At least for the moment, I think, Mr. Chair, that we have perhaps finished performance measure 4. Okay. Industrial sites, we're moving to performance measure number 5. Number of community capital projects assisted for construction. At the same time, let's look at performance measure number 6, which is the next one. Number of community capital projects assisted for planning. These are our infrastructure dollars, and we're able to do two different things with those dollars. We're able to actually construct and to build, but we can also help the communities plan for that infrastructure. So we've split those out because we have a different need from communities. And what you'll see is simply the targets and the actuals for planning. This number has gone down. It's lower than what we had predicted, and the reason is we're doing more hard construction these days. We're really trying to work more with industrial sites and get infrastructure into the ground rather than planning for it. So that's why you're seeing higher numbers for construction, lower for planning.
On this piece, at some point, can you come share information with me on the role or the partnership you folks have with USDA?
Sure.
And their infrastructure programs and how that partnership works and who takes the lead, who doesn't, et cetera.
Yes, Mr. Chair. All right. Moving to performance measure 7, number of identified traded sector industry clusters with active business development plans. It can be somewhat difficult for us to assist industry clusters directly, and so what we try to do is work with those groups to identify which clusters are most likely to be able to have a good economic benefit in Oregon, and then try to find ways that we can provide them money to help them pull themselves together as clusters, to help them market and advertise and to reach out to the businesses within those clusters.
What's the definition of a cluster?
The definition of a cluster, Mr. Chair, are businesses that are either regionally or topically in sync and are similar. Food processing is a cluster. Now, you can also do something, though, and start splitting down within clusters. And so that becomes somewhat difficult, and you simply make a definition of how big a circle do you draw around a cluster, and then what do we refer to as subclusters is how we do it.
Mr. Chairman, the OBC has a definition of a cluster, and we'll get to that, too. It also involves that it pays higher than the normal wage and a number of other factors, but we'll get you their definition, which I think
that would be really helpful to get the committee the definition of what clusters are.
Good. Performance measure number 8, number of patents per 10,000 Oregon businesses. This performance measure is a new one for us, and the reason that we put it into place is it's a way to try to measure the innovation economy that we've talked about. And so if you've got new ideas that are spinning off new businesses in this state, one way to find out about that and to track it are the number of patents that are being registered. So for that reason, that is performance measure number 8. And finally, performance measure number 9, overall customer survey score on a 1-4 scale, with 4 being highest possible. This one is probably familiar to you. It's a performance measure that every agency now is required to use. And we had targeted 3.5 on a 4-point scale as what we were hoping for. We just got back the results of our customer survey within the last month, and we got a 3.4. So we got close, but not quite there in terms of what we were targeting. However, we're up from 3.3 from last year. So for us, that is an improvement, but that's one that is common to all of the agencies in terms of being a benchmark.
Mr. Chair, it might be of interest to you that we range from a high of 100% on the Strategic Reserve Fund to our lower areas where on our contracts of regional rural. And we acknowledged that we had a problem there, but it kind of verified also the survey itself that kind of identified the areas which we thought we did have a problem in.
How do every committee that's come through here has had to listen to me drone on about stepping up to help small business? I'm trying to find the key performance measure that's going to give me the evidence or take away the evidence that you folks are taking care of small business in Oregon. Where do I find that?
Mr. Chair, we actually have secondary performance measures that we track, small business being one of those. And so we have other indexes that we're trying to look at or criteria in addition to what you see here, but we were trying to just become more focused. But of those total jobs created and retained, we are able to track out how many of those were small businesses given the program.
But how do I know? How would I know from the let me turn to Robin really quick. The performance measures that are before us, are those performance measures that they selected or that we provided for them?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's a little bit of both. There were originally 24 performance measures. The Ways and Means Subcommittee basically said this is way too much to deal with. Go back and come back with 9 key performance measures.
Okay.
And so what they have done is, and they worked in the interim with the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, to narrow their key performance measures down to the 9 that you see.
Okay. I appreciate that. Well, we'll have talk about it later. Any other questions of the committee? Director, we have 5 minutes. How would you like to use those 5 minutes?
Maybe I could summarize it by saying thank you very much for our conversations here. I think that we are needing to get back to you some answers, and we have some handouts here of some of the answers that you've asked in the last couple of days, and so we hope to respond to that. I hope among your takeaways is that we have a plan in place here, and for the last 2 years we've tried to execute that. That plan was dictated by the governor, by the legislature, and by the private sector. And that was jobs and jobs-oriented. We wanted to go get the jobs, and our return on investment, if you will, of that was that. I believe that we have been partially involved in the success that you see in the papers daily of the fact that the jobs are being created, the unemployment rate is falling, and in fact that there's a general feeling, I think, that the business climate is slightly better. we weren't the only people in that. We're not the state is not the only person in that. And as we all know, quite frankly, I think that the state can't create jobs. It can create the climate for jobs. Mm-hmm. But it is getting better. I think you see it in the revenue forecast that you see. I think you see it every day in the newspaper. And we have got a ways to go yet. We're not there yet. But we do have a plan. It is a dedicated plan, and I think it's working.
Well, Oregon Economic and Community Development Department is very important to the state of Oregon, and I think it's incumbent upon this committee to lock arm in arm with you folks and work together to figure out what is that plan and help ensure that you have the tools necessary to move forward on that. The one commentary I always provide is that in this building there's 91 experts in economic development, and on this committee we have a whole handful of folks who have their vision for what economic development ought to be. And what I'm hoping is over the coming weeks we'll be able to work through that and create a vision that the governor will be proud of, that the legislature will be proud of, but most importantly that the citizens of Oregon will be proud of. And so I think we'll just work together and we'll try and figure out how to make this work. Good. So, Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we have 3 minutes, can we still get another question in?
You bet. Okay. Unless you have a political speech.
I won't give a political speech. Under the industrial lands list and site map tab, looking at the results of the OECDD investments under the industrial land, now we have $34 million that we have classified as investments. Now, were those loans or were those grants?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morse, these are, I don't want to say all of them loans without checking, but I would say loans. I mean, these are loan programs that you're looking at right there. But I will get back to you to make sure that there were no small pieces put out in grants, but I would expect there were not.
Okay. It would be helpful, Mr. Chair, as we get more information on these, is the term of the loans, secured, unsecured, interest rates, amortization, all those kinds of things.
Also, Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I did want to respond to one of your questions. You asked about the discrepancy between 24 and 33. 33 are the sites we're looking at right now and working with. 24 of those have already been certified. The rest of them, the remainder, are being visited in the next month and will hopefully be certified within a month.
Well, committee, it's nearly 3 o'clock. I want to let each of you know that Senator Johnson and I will be working with the department daily for the next couple weeks, just trying to make sure that we all have a unified vision in moving the department forward. And we'd encourage any of you who would like to attend managing the quorum issues to participate in just sitting down and talking with us. So I guess with that said, unless there's any objection, we will adjourn for the day.